Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is the New Curiosities Box, a snapshot of the wondrous and intriguing from the cosmos of arts and culture in Birmingham and beyond. In this programme, we talk mercy, geography, prose and potatoes with poet, writer and comedic beacon, John Hegley, as he brings his interactive exploration of all the good things to Mac Birmingham. We consider family, separation, responsibility and change through Birmingham-born writer and performer Steve Camden's second play, I Knew You, as it illuminated Balsall Heath last month as part of a tour of community venues with the Birmingham Rep. And we catch up backstage on an inspired collaborative show from Dan Whitehouse and Jess Morgan, performing new and celebrated songs at the start of their recent tour. For more links, information and an archive of all the shows to date, check out our blog, www.thenewcuriositiesbox.blogspot.co.uk. We start with a personal triumph as I track down and quiz the poetry giant and comedic fountain of prose that is John Hegley, as he set up slides, notes and ukulele at Max Hexagon Theatre. I started with an admission from my own past. So, very luckily, I'm with John Hegley, who I have to admit, John, first of all, of being a bit of a fan of yours. And the first time I ever saw you, I was a lot younger than I am now, but it was at the Duke's Theatre in Lancaster when I was a student.
Oh.
Around about 94, I think it was. So, I've got a few.
Was there any dancing? Can you remember that?
I think there was some dancing.
With Tony?
Yeah, I think Tony was there. And, I think the whole crew were there at one point, I think.
I don't think the Popticians have ever played Lancaster, the group, but I think it might have been later when I did it with Tony, because I know Isabella was born. Uh-huh. So I think it was about 97 when I did it with Tony, so it might not have been. It might have been when I did, because I did the Literature Festival, Litfest.
Ah. Uh-huh. So since that point, you've been on my radar, I think, for a while, really, so because I find what you do intriguing and interesting.
Yeah.
Which is a good place to start, isn't it, really? So we're here at the Mac tonight, and you're sort of doing your tour, your piece, Love and Potatoes. Which are these two very important things in life, do you think?
Well, that's a sort of, it's a good start, isn't it? Peace, love and potatoes. I mean, I suppose some people would be wary of starch, but it's really saying physical nourishment is talking about. Physical nourishment and...
Kind of theme of well-being, I guess.
Well, I guess so, yeah. Nourishment. Nourriture. And French, there's quite a lot of French in the show because Dad was half French. And we celebrate that, really. Celebrate the Frenchness. And there's singing, the audience sing. And do some moves of the bird. I've got this Guillemot badge here.
I noticed that. I thought it was a penguin initially. It looks a bit
penguin-like.
But then I noticed his neck was slightly longer.
It's a bird that dives into the sea for fish. And can dive in unbelievable depths. I don't know how deep the show goes. But
I read today an unbelievable news story about a man, I don't know if you've read this, who swallowed a live Dover sole.
Yeah.
Right, and then, this isn't a joke. He did it because he was trying to kiss it. So there's something about love and about danger in that, I think, isn't it? But thankfully, a paramedic saved his life.
Cheapest.
It's just a crazy thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
I've not done that.
No, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, there's some unusual things that get into people's stomachs, aren't there? I mean, you haven't been in the medical profession, might have heard some other ones, but...
There's lots of grisly stories, haven't there?
Okay. Well, there's not in... In the show, there tend not to be grisly stories. I tend to... My partner, Mel, when she used to go and get us a video, when the video shop was open, she said it has to be... It has to have no sex, no violence, and it has to be French.
Was there a particular kind of, you know, stall for that? Was it, you know, a section next to
we seem to have found... There's actually... Somebody gave me two videos for my birthday. One is a Jacques Tati La Fête Festival one. And another one is... I think it's called Two Horsemen, which looks beautiful, actually. So I'm looking forward to seeing those.
You got it on the list. So lots of people would describe you, I guess, as a poet. But you're so much more than that, I think, because you are... You are, I don't know if comedian's the right word. You're a writer. You deal in comic prose, but there's also something that folks might not know about you, which is you're an honorary doctor of arts, I think, at the University of Bedfordshire.
Yeah.
And that's quite impressive. So you have a lot of strings to your bow, I think.
Well, that was a very lovely thing to be given, actually. And I wondered why they gave me it. But then I remembered that I did some workshops with some of the students. But it was quite a long time before that I was given that. And also, I suppose I do fly a flag for Luton and Bedfordshire to some extent.
I was going to ask you about Luton, because Luton's a kind of important place that crops up, doesn't it, in a lot of your work?
Yeah.
Along with Bristol and...
Well, I was brought up there, you know, ages of 2 to 16 I was there. I mean, massively formative years, the first kiss, but not of a fish.
No, you've got to be careful with that.
First cigarette, first word. No, probably first swear word.
Will you be using that tonight, or is it...
I tend not to. Okay, there's a poem by Les Murray that's, interestingly, you mentioned that your own work has been in the funeral, the world of funerals. There's a wonderful poem about, I guess, his own father dying, and I wish I could remember it, because it's a beautiful poem. And he does use a swear word, but it's wonderful language. It's not bad language. It's amazingly well-placed.
Somebody said to me once that there's no such thing as bad language. It's just good language used badly. And I thought,
well,
that's quite a good description.
That is a good description.
But I can't remember who it was. That's the only annoying thing.
It doesn't matter. You've remembered the thing. That's the main thing. if you remember the name and no substance, for the person concerned, they would probably be happier. But as a more general principle, it wouldn't be much use.
Now, you've also done some other things, so I've been studying your checkered past, let's put it that way. And not only have you sort of done busking, which is a great... I've done busking before. It's a great thing to do, isn't it, busking?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told me once to do busking and use the proceeds to buy a cup of coffee. And they said the coffee would taste much better.
It's true. I did that in Germany. We were filming, and I had no... Because basically everything was bought for you. You never had to go and get any... bother with any money, and it was sort of before cash. There were cash machines, but I didn't use them at that time. And so, because you didn't have to worry about any money, I didn't have any. And I thought, oh, I'll just fancy wandering off and getting a cuppa. And I thought, I'll just play and I'll sing and I'll get some money. And
that it's was very liberating, I think.
Well,
isn't it?
It's there's something about just the immediacy of earning what you need from playing in that way. It's a very down-to-earth thing.
Now, you've also amazingly done a Peel session, I think, in your past.
Politicians, yeah, we did two John Peel sessions, one in 83, one in 84. And Joe is setting up, and it's fine, Joe, to set up while we're doing this, Joe is setting up the table and the mics for the show. And also, he has photographed on his phone some of the pages in the book so we can show the drawings that are in the book, which is really nice.
Excellent. So there's that interactivity, isn't there, in your show? Get folks doing stuff.
Well, Interaction is the first company I worked for, a theatre company, and it has remained with me, Interacting. I mean, audience participation is a little bit of a, it doesn't seem to give it the glory it deserves, audience participation. There's a bit of that really about audience participation, isn't there? But
do you think folks are kind of? I guess the audiences are different, but are people reluctant, or do they sort of?
No, they tend not to be, because I think they know that it's seeking delight, and I think people sense that.
Now, the other thing you've done, looking back in your past, is it true you've been a bus conductor?
I was, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I was a bus conductor in Bristol and I can't remember if it's the 13 or the 14 route. I'm in Bristol next weekend, so I'll find out.
Now, is that a role you're going to reprise, do you think, maybe? Just for, not longer term.
Doing the show is a bit like being a bus conductor. These are your passengers. And you are not the driver, but the custodian and guide.
And people look up to you, don't they? People look to you for direction, I think.
To some extent they do. In this context, but it's a bit like when the bus conductor leaves the bus, they are no longer the bus conductor, they are a member of the public. But for the period of the journey, we are on a bus ride. Public service.
Now, the other thing, on the theme of travel, the thing that makes me think about you most, when I think about John Hegley, is when I'm stuck at a particular train station. Okay, so I do a bit of travelling out and about. When I get stuck at Bristol Temple Meads, I always think of your rather famous piece, I think.
I'll tell you what, because I've lengthened that. Hold on, I'll find it for you.
Okay.
Some new lines to that. So I went to Bradford Uni and got a degree in European Literature and Sociology, which is...
That's no mean feat, I think, is it, that combination?
That was a delight. And I say it's a privileged education to have gone to been, you know, given the chance to go to West Yorkshire, because it's wonderful. So, my father played the banjo, but it's mandolin for me. And I came from Bradford, Yorkshire, with a rather poor degree. I had a dream the other night, I was playing a guitar, when I was kicked quite forcefully by Monsieur Cantona. I said, "Hey there, Eric, now why do that to me?" He said, "That is from your father for your rather poor degree. From Bradford, Yorkshire, to Bristol, Temple, Meads. You don't have to change your underwear, but you have to change at Leeds."
That is a fantastic extended version, isn't it? Is it a remix? I guess it's a redux, maybe. That's the parlance, isn't it?
It's a bit of a creased page.
It was a joy to hear that, I have to say. And it took... Strangely, when I'm at that railway station, I think of John Hegley. When I'm with John Hegley, I think of that railway station. There we go.
What are you doing in Bristol?
Well, Bristol's one of those places where you change, isn't it? It's an exchange.
But where are you going?
It's a terminus. Well, I've lived in Swindon, you see. So if you live in Swindon, you have to go to Bristol, because it's not a great deal in Swindon.
There's a poem I've written about, somebody McFadden's poem about in the gallery in Swindon.
My wife and I started our relationship between Exeter and Newcastle upon Tyne. So
on the train?
We didn't start on the train, but we had one of those kind of, you know, every other weekend kind of relationships.
Oh, that's a long journey.
So Bristol was a kind of
a stopping off point,
you see. So I wanted to ask you about radio, John, because you do a lot of, well, you've done a lot of radio things, and Hearing with Hegley, I think, is a particular fine series that you've put out. And have you got any more plans to do things like that? Or
we did. There was a radio drama on last year. I don't know if you heard that. Did you hear that? It was called Deceit, Desire, and the Viking Helmet.
I did hear it. I've heard one of those. Yes.
Well, there was only one.
Oh, okay. I thought there might be more than that. Okay, that's what.
There was that. And
so, is there plans for more? Or
I've been writing this story today that I thought could possibly be made into another radio story. I think the Ian McMillan thing, and I don't know if that's been out on Radio 3 yet, I did a contribution to The Verb, which might be coming out soon.
Okay.
Because he did a big load of shows, poetry shows in Hull, and I was in one. And it was real fun, actually.
And Hull's the big city, isn't it, this year?
And that where the football fans sing, "We're only here for the culture."
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Now, the other thing I want to ask you about was some of the sort of charity things that you started doing, and some of the kind of things that you've done more than what you regularly do to help folks. So you've done some stuff around mental health. You've done May Contain Nuts, I think it was called.
Yeah.
So where's that now? What's
I think that that is something that was organised by a group called Company Paradiso. Down they're based in Shoreham on the south coast, and John, who was the organizer, got me to be involved in that. There was a very good review of the show that we did in Reading, and it was a mixture of folk who'd had mental health problems. I have myself. I'm wondering if there was any who didn't have, and I'm wondering if there's any way in the world who don't have mental health problems. If you do, I think you've got a problem, I reckon.
I think what's great about something like that is that it, through the arts, it makes that kind of discussion around mental health, mental well-being, really accessible. I think, you know, so
yeah.
I think that's credit to you for that.
Well, it's more, John was organised it, and I was grateful to be involved because if there's a chance of bringing it out more, clarifying it, because people don't know about it, and people know about a broken leg, but they don't know so much about the ins and outs of depression, psychosis, and it's just an opportunity to clarify something and give some information, really. It is something one can be funny about, but it's harder when you're depressed.
Indeed. So let's come back, just to finish, let's come back to tonight, Love and Potatoes. You are also doing...
And Peace.
And Peace. Sorry, I keep forgetting Peace, don't I? Do you think that's a bad omen that I keep forgetting?
I don't think it is. I think... It's
starch, probably. It's stopped me.
Well, I think the piece is important, actually. There was a friend of mine called Oliver Bernard, who was a peace activist, and he's a Roman Catholic. I'm a Roman Catholic, and Oliver was with a group of, I think they were nuns. No, I think it was Christians of various sorts, and they were writing up something about having mercy to do with at a time when there was peace, a peace protest. And Oliver said, and I had the privilege of putting the RC into the word mercy, because they were all painting it up and they had to do it fast. But there's something really lovely about that. So we put the R, you know, one might think, well, yeah, well, I'm, you know, I'm not, even whatever you think of Catholics or Catholicism or religion, there's something beautifully poetic about that. And I suppose it's about stating a case of something that maybe people are, won't easily necessarily pick up on, be sympathetic towards. And that is the opportunity that one has with comedy, with something like mental health, is to maybe try and make people a little more sympathetic and understanding of it.
Excellent. I think that's a very powerful message, I think, on which to finish. So, John, it's been a delight to meet you. And
I think we should have a poem to finish with.
We should have a poem to finish with. It would only be right, wouldn't it, to do that?
Let's see. Have you got any children?
I have a daughter, yes.
How old is she?
She's six.
Well, she might like a hamster poem.
She probably would.
I'm a hamster, I'm not a monster, I'm not a guinea pig, an earwig or a chancer. I am a hamster, just you remember. I'm not a dog, don't call me, I won't answer. I like to scratch round, I like to scarper. I like to chew to keep my teeth shorter and sharper. I'm a hamster.
Excellent, John, thank you very much.
You can find more on John's work and unique capture of our modern predicament at www.johnhegley.co.uk. Now, Meet Me at the Old Printworks may sound like something straight from a John le Carré tome, but who could resist such an offer on a Saturday night? Well, not me. I caught up with Lorna Laidlow and Brenton Hamilton from the cast of I Knew You as they readied themselves for a recent performance of the play. I started with some dramatic context.
I'm here in the kind of echoey back room, let's call it that, of the old printworks, somewhere in deepest Balsall Heath. And I'm with Lorna.
Hello.
And Brenton.
Hello.
Who are stars of, or at least protagonists, let's put it that way, of I Knew You, okay, which I've just about pronounced properly, which is quite an intriguing bit of theatre, really. And I think sometimes people, when they hear the words community in theatre, they take a step back, don't they? They're not quite sure what to expect from that. So Lorna, what should folks expect from I Knew You?
I think they should expect an absolutely riveting piece of theatre. I think that's what they should expect. I think you're right. I think people do have a very negative view of community theatre, because I think they associate it with amateur theatre productions, and this is a professional theatre company linked to the Birmingham Rep. It was first performed at the Birmingham Rep for a whole week, and the Barry Draxon Trust has paid for this whole tour so people can come and see it for free, which is an amazing thing. I mean, we had one woman in a library earlier on this week who had never been to the theatre. She'd never seen a play before in her whole life.
Wow.
That's quite incredible. And for somebody to say, I want to see more, that's what the Jackson Trust is about. Do you know what I mean?
It's that kind of, I suppose, accessibility, isn't it? It's driving sort of, you know, not driving people to things, but it's saying to people, well, you know, things like theatre and opera and comedy,
it's for all of us.
It's for everybody.
Yeah, I think it's not driving. I think it's opening a door. Hmm. I think it's a door that many people think is closed to them. And I think what's fantastic about this, and it's quite brave of the Rep, is to bring it to places where actually a lot of these people will never go to the Birmingham Rep to see a production. So to bring it to them and say, come and see what's going on, and the hope is that they might pop their head round to see something interesting. It's a Brucey bonus, really, isn't it?
It is, and you've been doing a grand tour of, I think, some of the finest places in the West Midlands.
I agree.
So you've got Oldbury.
Yeah.
Erdington.
Always.
Yeah, Sandwell.
Get in there.
And some other places. You were talking earlier, you've done a six so far, I think?
Yes, King's Standing.
It's going to make a hell of a tour t-shirt, isn't it, with these things on the back?
Yes, it will, definitely.
And most of the venues, I think, so far have been quite small venues, sort of libraries or cafes or those kind of things. And I think you've done a dangerous thing as well, in terms of you've just sort of waited to see who'll show up.
you know, and that is always dangerous, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Risky, maybe.
But
way.
I think that's exactly the same as when you're in the theatre. Really?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You have to just wait. You put the production on, you get it together, and you just have to wait for people to turn up. Some nights there's going to be a full house, and some nights it's not going to be so full. The unpredictability of the tour is what makes it exciting. Mm. You know, we went to... just dropped my chewing gum, sorry.
Technical fault there.
I know. We went to a school yesterday, and the school had consciously decided to get the Ford Dwellings and King Edward's in the same building to watch a production. There was after-show discussion, which means the kids got to ask us things about the production and how we got to the place we got to, how the tour was, how about the person who wrote the script. So all of that experience they would not have got if they'd gone to the theatre. So it's a really important thing.
And it's part of a programme of performances, I should say, which I think is called New and Nurtured. Is that right? So
yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So basically, I think it's around 5 to 6 plays that are new and nurtured at the Birmingham Rep. Some one-man, one-woman pieces. Some have been collaborative with the Rep and some have been out of the Rep's work. I haven't got to see all of them yet, but there's some on later on this month, Freeman, which has got really good reviews.
And it's very local, I think, and it's very new in the sense that, you know, these are brand new plays, but
yes,
brand new writing,
yeah,
which is, I think, in itself quite an exciting thing, because there's not perhaps enough of that experimentation, I think, these days.
No.
I think it's crucial. I think the door, particularly at the Rep, used to be renowned for new work and new writing and launching new writers. And I think going back, I mean, if you look at the company, the productions that are going on and the people who are working behind them, it's very young and vibrant. These are new people coming into the industry, looking at things from a different angle. Really exciting. The Reps even had deals on where you can book all 6 shows for £30. How can you book 6
bargain, isn't it?
Shows for £30 anywhere? So to go and see this new work and say you were there first and talk to the director or maybe talk to the actors and things might shift because of the discussions you have, I think it's an absolute gift, really. And this is part of that. Stephen Camden's a really established writer, but his body of work really touches different parts of the community. So, you know, we performed it in front of elders, we've been performed it in front of teenagers, and they have different responses to different things, which is really exciting to see as well. He's a fantastic writer.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the play and the writing then, because as you mentioned, Stephen Camden is the writer of this,
I
Knew You. Mm. Now he's also got a kind of superhero name, hasn't he? I think as Polar Bear.
That's it.
I think that's his name, isn't it? So have I just revealed, you know, it's like revealing that
Banksy.
Batman and Bruce
Banksy.
Wayne, that kind of stuff, Banksy, yeah. So, but he, I suppose he uses a different name or a kind of a nom de plume, they would say, or a nom de guerre, let's say that, to do different things, you know, obviously, because sort of spoken word and sort of narrative and poetry stuff is slightly different from some of his theatrical writing. But let's come back to this piece. I guess what would be good is to try and get a handle on the kind of themes we're trying to tackle here. There's something, I think, immediately about family and disconnection and isolation, I think.
Well, yeah, I think it's domestic dynamics and like there's no such thing really as a conventional family. And I think it's just the play just discovers how people try and work around it when people come in our lives, people go out of our lives.
It's quite a reflective piece, isn't it? And I think there's something about how people got into a situation, but equally how perhaps they're trapped by a situation. Is that a fair...
Yes, definitely, yeah. And you have to make, I think like the director, Daniel Bailey, said, no matter what happens, you have to make a choice, and not making a choice is a choice in itself. So you get given, just like you get given your family, and things happen and you work around it together.
Now, interestingly, there's a lot at the moment, quite rightly, there's a lot of arts and culture that focuses on mental health and mental well-being. And I think this is an intriguing piece because it kind of looks at what I would call social health.
Oh.
You know, it kind of looks at the sort of the vibrancy of a community or, you know, how strong a community is around an individual. And that's quite sort of new territory, I think.
Yeah, I think in this climate, it's crucial. It's crucial. A sense of community is a really important thing at this moment. And actually, it all starts with a family and works outwards, doesn't it? And this family unit between a mother and a son is a very tight unit until something implodes on it. And it's how that family unit handles that implosion. We don't see any further in the community how that affects the community, but you see how that one little element sort of fragments this unity, and how through the play they can get back together and how they can make this family unit work as best they can with what they've got, really.
There's a kind of dramatic catalyst, isn't there, that makes people reconsider who and where. There's a lot of banging, we should say.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably King Kong. Leaving it upstairs, I don't know. But it's not me, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. But yeah, there's a moment, there's something, there's an event, without spoiling the plot, there's something that happens that kind of casts the cards on the table,
and you have to pick the cards up. You look at the cards and you think, what do we do with this collection of cards? And again, it's your choice. You either pick them up or you leave them and walk away. So it's all about those choices. And it's great talking to the audience afterwards about the choice the play makes, and they have different ideas about those choices, which is, again, it's raising discussion, and I think it's really important. Really, really important.
So let's talk a little bit about yourselves now as actors, okay? And an actor's life, I guess, is a difficult one these days in the sense that, you know...
We're going like that. It's all right.
Most industries are kind of going through a bit of a strange phase at the moment. But how did you come to this? I mean, obviously you do a kind of portfolio of things, you know, across the year, i.e. you do lots of different things. And, you can pick and choose to an extent kind of the things that you want to do. And I think the most important thing is knowing what you don't want to do, I think. But how did you get involved in this? How did you sort of link into this production?
I think over the years, establishing a relationship with some of the people at the Rep, the directors, the producers, doing small things around Birmingham, and them having they're aware of some of the new actors coming up, because I've only been an actor for around 4 years. I graduated university and doing small fringe things and auditioning.
Yeah.
Auditioning, basically.
Trying hard,
bouncing back.
That's the way to go. And Lorna, you've got lots of other things on the go. You've famously done some TV recently, haven't you? Which for an actor, I think, is, you know, like... Oh, it's probably not the highest point to go for, is it? But people always grasp what
I know.
What TV
it's a funny
do,
thing, isn't it? I don't think it is the highest. I don't think. I think it has a bit too much... I think it has a little bit too much of this grand thing that you have to do TV to be a proper actor. I think it's a thing that people aim for because people expect you to. If you're an actor, they think you should be on television.
Yes.
Rather than that's what you should be. And I think, actually, to be a jobbing actor is to be an actor. If you're in a TIE production, if you're in a fringe production, if you're in a telly thing, if it's a big part, it's a small part, 97% of actors aren't working. So if you're working, you're doing an amazing job to have battled your way into a production of any kind. So I would say that. And it is I think it is really difficult. I think it's getting harder and harder for actors, because lots of theatres are doing collaborations now, which means this theatre and that theatre used to do two big productions. Now they're collaborating on one production, which sort of the pool goes down about jobs actors can go to. So I think it is difficult for actors to get work. So whatever you're doing, if you're a working jobbing actor and you're working, actually you are in a very small minority of people who are doing that.
And how about the kind of wider scope of things? Have you done writing, directing?
Yeah, I do write. But I think it's also because acting, when you've got children, is such a hard thing because you have to travel all over the world. So you do things, and a lot of actors do this, to ground themselves until my children are 24 and 22 now. So you ground yourselves in places and you write and you direct because it doesn't take up so much of your time. So I work a lot in community. I do lots of, and it's free work. I give my time for free because I think the telly's paying for that.
Yeah.
There's not enough money being put in the community. I'm quite happy to help and support the community work because I think the telly work I do pays to help and support. It's a continual thing about doing work in the community, writing, being on telly, directing. It's, for me, it's all things that I've worked up and done because of necessity, because lack of work, because the work wasn't good enough, so I've decided to create something. So you do things because you want the work to be good out there, I think.
Excellent. Now, I'm really looking forward to the performance later on. I shall be sitting at the back row.
I thought you'd seen it. You've got such knowledge.
That's all part of the illusion.
Well done.
You see?
Magic act.
I'll be sitting at the back row behaving myself.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
With the popcorn and the champagne or something like that. But in the meantime, Lorna and Brenton, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you
very much.
For more information on this and future productions, go to www.birmingham-rep.co.uk. You're listening to the New Curiosities Box, and I'm James Sandy. If you have an idea for a future show or would like to get in touch, check out our blog, thenewcuriositiesbox.blogspot.co.uk. Jess Morgan and Dan Whitehouse recently explored the landscape of their collaboration on a short tour of common songs, styles and questions. I press-ganged them both into a dressing room corner to get a sense of what they had achieved and its songwriting potential.
Everything is free now, that's what they say. Everything I've ever done, gonna give it away. Someone hit the big score, figured it out. We're gonna do it anyway, even if it doesn't pay. Get a tip jar, gas up the car, try to make a little change down at the bar. Or I could get a straight job, I've done it before. Never mind it working hard, it's who I'm working for.
Jess and I collaborated on my record, That's Where I Belong. We actually met many years before that in a show together in Norwich, and we stayed in touch, and then we wrote a song together, a song called Close Up, which you can hear on the record, and we recorded it at Coyote Studios in Glasgow. And we had such a great session, we thought, why not, you know, collaborate a little more and play out together outside the studio.
And unbelievably, that album, I think, has just had an anniversary. It's a year or so, I think, since it came out. Is that right? September of last year?
That's Where I Belong. Yeah.
That went quick.
No? It was that ages? It's been a long year.
It's been a hard year.
It's been hard work. Yeah, I was about to say it's been a fast year.
The show that you're doing, are you doing some collaboration in the set? Are you sort of doing a split set? How's it working?
We're gonna play our own sets, and we're gonna play some stuff from our albums, and maybe I think we're both trying out a few new things tonight as well, aren't we? Because it's kind of, I don't know, two kind of singer songwriters together. It's kind of like, hopefully, the people out there are gonna be the kind of people that want to hear like songs for the sake of being songs, if you know what I mean, if that isn't too pretentious,
now,
you know.
If you're listening to this, I'm very sorry that you missed out on this opening night, which is actually sold out, we're proud to say. And thanks to everybody that's bought tickets. But you're going to have to, listener, please do come and make an effort to come to one of our other shows. I think there's a few tickets left for Glasgow.
Yeah, there's a few, yeah.
And this is going out in Birmingham, so.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, no, it's a hop, skip and a jump, really, isn't it?
It's but a short bus ride away down, I believe. Yeah. Now, obviously, when you're out and about as singer-songwriters individually, you kind of work with a number of different people and you meet a lot of people in this trade, I think, don't you, through one way or another. So
nobody's nice as you there, James.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so, but what's different when you decide to collaborate or when you decide to tour together? Is there a click? Is there a chemistry? Is there something that perhaps binds you? Is there a common force, perhaps?
No, you're right. Now you say it, it's being a singer-songwriter is one of those great jobs where you get the credit for everything, but actually, yeah, you do really rely on a whole host of other people to kind of to help you along. Maybe that's a secret of my ego I didn't really know about, because there's a lot of people involved in making a record, putting a tour together.
Well, you say you get the credit, but I don't really feel like I've had enough credit yet.
No.
I've got room for more credit.
Is this about your name being second on the poster again? It's alphabetical by surname.
I was just going to say, there must be some kind of order to it.
Now, it's a good question, James, and I feel that Jess and I do have a connection when we're in the studio together. It was all very fluid. We didn't have to. There's a lot of unspoken things, and we were able to write the song and record it. And I like to work with people that I think are better than me. I like to work with people that inspire me, with making stuff. And let's face it,
none of them were available.
There's some complimentary pressure there, I think he was applying.
No, I think what's going on here is I've been thinking recently how that sense of community you get with being an artist is. It's really important to nurture that, and I know Jess does that, and because there's so many crazy things, cruel things that we're doing to one another on the planet, it's really important to do positive things and to surround yourself with positive people whenever possible, really.
Jess, I wanted to ask you about your kind of recent album.
Okay.
It's got a very intriguing title. I'm going to pronounce it wrong, I think. Is it called Edison Gloriette?
No, you're spot on. Good
so tell me about that, because it's an intriguing title.
Well, it's two cinema names. I went through this funny phase of... Well, it wasn't even a funny phase. I was just going to museums. Yeah, and I saw a few things from newspapers that were framed and they were made into exhibits for the museums. But on several occasions, down the side of the newspaper, there were cinema listings. So and from around the world as well. And every time I saw there's such lovely words. Every time I saw an interesting one, I wrote it down. And it got to the point where on top of my piano, I just had this kind of running list of kind of really nice words that I liked, and one day I was looking at it and two of them just kind of shot together and I thought, oh, that sounds kind of like what I want my album to be called. So it's kind of hard to explain why.
Almost, in some ways, like Jefferson Airplane, you know, it's that kind of serendipity, that kind of name that sounded right.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, it's like Dan says, you know, some of the unspoken things are the things that sort of you want to follow up on. So I just thought, well, yeah, that can be it then.
Well, there's a few other things I wanted to quiz you on. One is the album itself was released on a Norwegian label.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah.
So how did that come about? Have you got a big following in Norway?
No.
You will have, obviously.
Oh, I hope so. One day. It's a beautiful country. I love going there. I mean, I've got a little bit of a following there because I made my first record there, and I kind of have a really close friend there who's also a fantastic producer, crazy guy. You know, working with him is chaos and a dream at the same time. And it just so happened that both he and a really great engineer were available at the same time. So I just kind of jumped on it and I went back there to make this record. And then through kind of, you know, people that we know, it got sent to a label owner over there and who really wanted to take the record. So.
And you also, I think, have a bit of a kind of a technical urge as well in terms of musical production. You do a lot of kind of production things, don't you?
No, the opposite. I hate production. I'm really bad at it. And actually, with this record was the first time I made a deliberate kind of move to be quite hands off. Actually, I certainly listened to the mixes and I gave some comments, but they were very minimal. And I was really with this record. And it's awful to say, but for the first time, willing to accept that actually, you know, other people know how to do their jobs and I don't know how to mix records or things like that. So I really just kind of lent into to
kind
their
of
expertise.
Drawn in slightly, I guess.
Yeah, and it did make me wonder, you know, how many of my sort of recordings of the past I might have ruined by having a hand in the mix. But I know I'm not technical at all. I'm very much in the lyrics and the music and the story.
Now, you alluded earlier on to some experimentation in terms of the set you're doing. And are there particular songs that you've plucked out that you are sort of interpreting this evening? The songs that you've loved or you found sort of there's common ground on?
Yeah, I think so. I think we've chosen some of our favourites, definitely.
There was a little bit of Neil Young earlier on, I heard.
Well, it's funny, actually, because I remember hearing that on the radio, and I think it was at the time where Dan and I were kind of trying to cut down our list of songs that we might want to do together, and I mentioned that one, having no idea that Dan had such a long kind of history of collaborating on that song with other people. So it was quite kind of, I don't know if serendipitous is the word, but I hope it is, because it was impressive, and I just said it. But,
it's a very good word to use, isn't it?
I think if one song can save you, it's that one, Helpless, Neil Young.
There is a town, North Ontario, with strange comfort memories spin. And in my mind, I still need a place to go. All my changes were there. Big birds flying, across the sky. Yeah, moon on the rise. Blue, blue windows behind the stars. Throwing shadows on their eyes. Leaves are helpless, helpless, helpless. Leaves us helpless, helpless, helpless. Baby, baby, sing with me somehow. Lost in time behind the stars. Throwing shadows on our
I wanted to ask you finally, just to kind of reflect on sort of folk and protest music, if you like, in the age of fake news. There's lots of people at the moment struggling. You know, satire is very easy at the moment because, you know, our politics almost generates satire itself, it seems. But I wanted to, so what's the kind of artistic response to some of that? It's quite difficult to get your head around, I think, isn't it? Because some of it's quite unbelievable.
Yeah, I think protest song is it. It's a great big world, isn't it? And I think it could be very easy to dismiss any song that doesn't immediately tackle a problem in a kind of very linear way as being not a protest song. But actually, I think, I don't want to say any song is a protest song, but I think any kind of portion of what we do for our jobs that we can dedicate to, maybe kind of alluding to what our stamp is on the world is the vaguest answer in the world, you know.
I think to make good art, you need to look within and then completely rip open your heart and share yourself as you would with your immediate family and close friends. And I think we need to get these good people together, get good like-minded people together and make positive things happen against all odds, really. And the show that we're doing is completely original music. It's self-expression. It's not pre-processed. It's not thought out. It's just two people speaking their own truth, you know, and we invite any like-minded people to come in and share in that.
That is a very encouraging message, I think, and I just wanted to finish by asking you, I don't want to sort of speed the pace of things, but we're nearly at the end of this year, so 2018 is looming. So what plans have you got for the next year? Are you building on this tour? Are you sort of going to produce things together, or you got separate things going on? What are you up to?
I would say, at bare minimum, we'll do one song together. One show together in 2018. I won't let it get to the 31st of December 2018 without. I'll turn up on your doorstep with an audience.
Sounds
good.
We'll
have done a gig together next year. I'm taking a tiny bit of a break, actually. I've kind of scaled back on gigs a little bit for next year because I'm studying a little bit and, that's a big deal to me, so I kind of want to give it the best of my attention. But I'll always be writing songs, you know.
A bit of recharge and reflection,
yeah,
I think
so.
Helps everyone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So.
But Dan, you're making a record, aren't you?
I'm making like a mountain-sized record. This
Another
is
one, Dan.
Big mountain that I got to climb. I'm not even halfway up. But I've got enough supplies and I just keep walking. It's based on improvised bird song. I recorded lots of bird song and then I worked out what the birds are singing on my guitar. Because I was completely sick and bored of what I was playing on my guitar. I was completely sick and bored of what I was writing about myself, my own feelings. I've found people's stories, I've found interesting journeys, that humans have taken. You know, there's a new song about an abandoned baby found at Birmingham Odeon Cinema. That felt, you know, cast away throughout his entire life until he was eventually reunited, you know, just a couple of years before his death with his brother. There's another song set out in a Russian jail where nobody's ever been released in 26 years, and this jail takes 80 hours to drive to in a deep forest. So I just want to chart this incredible these people have been through and put it into song. It's more of a kind of improvised, the music's more improvised. I've been jamming with a band featuring flute and drums and keyboards and bass, and I'm just enjoying the process. I can't wait to get back to it, to the drawing board when the tour's finished. You know, it's great. There's very different kind of activity, performing and writing, but I want to do both. Please let me do both.
I would never stop you, of course not. So I'm going to let you now get ready, prepared for the set. I wish you the best of luck. I know, Jess, there's going to be some sequins. I'm already excited to see those.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, my jacket. I mean, it's not exactly what I thought. It was a bit of a punt on eBay, but you know, it's the only one I got, and you know, I just I better go and shake the creases out of it and get it on.
It's the age of endeavour, isn't it?
Yeah.
So for now, thank you both, and good luck with the tour, and we'll meet again, as somebody famously said.
Thanks for coming and talking.
You can spend many happy hours at www.dan-whitehouse.com and www.jessmorgan.co.uk. Consider yourselves informed. And now it's time to close the box. My thanks to John Hegley, Lorna Laidlow, Brenton Hamilton, Dan Whitehouse, Jess Morgan, The Rep Birmingham, the Sir Barry Jackson Trust and Mac Birmingham for their support in the making of this programme. You can tune in for some seasonal fare on our show on the 20th of December 2017. The New Curiosities Box is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for Switch Radio.